Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Get the Table, another Wrestling Roundtable discussion podcast with myself, Adam Wilborn, and one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, here to discuss another burning wrestling issue. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, the Wednesday Night War between AEW and NXT, pay-per-views, we have interviews, more roundtable discussions like this one, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick. And, sir, we are gathered... getting closer, though. We are socially distanced here today. We could have probably recorded this in my garden if I'd planned ahead enough. Anyway, to talk about WrestleMania myths. And we are here to expose them, Michael Sidgwick. Before we get into it, though, I can't believe I'm saying this. Less than 2 weeks to go until WrestleMania. How are you feeling?
I mean, I'm... feeling okay, I guess. It feels like a SummerSlam card,
yeah,
more than a WrestleMania card. And maybe that's being generous. What's happened is that the years, people ask themselves the questions, oh God, you know, can imagine how great WrestleMania would be and how many stars would be made if the part-timers just bloody pissed off once in a while. And now that has almost all, like almost completely happened. There's only two part-timers across both nights of Mania. And what's happened is, oh, it's kind of mid this and doesn't feel like there's any stars. Almost as if one of the reasons why they parachuted in the old stars is because they were incapable of creating new ones to replace them over the course of the past 10 years, I would say at this point. Yeah, we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary, right? In fact, we've passed the anniversary itself, but this is the first... this is the 10 years since Triple H, because he said it in 2011. He said to The Undertaker... the reason why I'm challenging you, Undertaker, is because no one else is worthy of the honor in the back. We're the last two men, really, when you think about it, who are still stars. That's what he said explicitly in the text of that WrestleMania build. And he said, I look around the back and I don't see anybody else. And it's like, well, if you're name names, then go all the way with the burial. I mean, who else are you going to fight? Zack Ryder? I mean, what are you going to do? We got over, but, you know, we didn't want him to. I mean, yeah. So 11 years, 10 years to the day where it's finally feeling like, well, there's not that many part-timers and it just feels a bit mid. So look, here's the thing. There are certain matches on the night that I think will be really, really great and or entertaining. Like, I'm looking forward to Miz versus Bad Bunny. I'm looking forward to the triple threat, even though I don't like triple threats, because if anyone's going to be great in a triple threat, and I know this from precedent, it's going to be Daniel Bryan. Like Cesaro versus Seth Rollins. The build has been the build. There's been some decent physical comedy timing in that build, but it's still not like this life-affirming, great angle, great promo telly. Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, again, it's another indictment of WWE. This is literally the worst storyline they've ever been involved with, right? And they've been intertwined career-wise for about 15 years. So it's just, all right, the rubbish storylines in WWE, but you know, they've got previous, they had a feud. What was the, why they had a one-on-one match on pay-per-view? They had like a 4.5-star ripper where it was just like, Jesus Christ, they're dumping each other on each other's heads. Great. 2016, I want to say. But 2017, 2016, maybe, regardless, they'll let them do their thing and that'll be great. And again, this is a long way of saying the usual crack. Telly's rubbish, roster's good, hence why the telly's bad and the pay-per-views are usually good. It's just what it is. And WrestleMania... look, the builds have been actively awful at times. It's time for them to finally do some decent go-home angles.
Yeah, I will say this. After watching SmackDown on Saturday, I don't know whether it's, again, it's just because I watch these things on a weekend and go, oh, great, and how I can just, like, not think about this for the rest of the weekend. I was genuinely buzzed for WrestleMania off the back of that. Like you say, with the extra matches that they've added and the fact they just didn't arse about. Remember when Kofi was meant to be in the main event of WrestleMania? They were like, oh, maybe he's not going to be. And you were like, just get on with it. The fact that they just pulled the trigger and they went, look, there you go. Triple threat, job done. That's the right thing to do. Really looking forward to it. But like you say, compared, like, alongside that, as much as I am excited, and I think like probably like 8 of the 11 matches that have been advertised, certainly not The Fiend versus Randy Orton, but, you know, others have potential to be match of the night. Like you say, there is that nagging thing in the back of my head where on the one hand, I'm like, look at this card. It looks amazing. Look at all the stars in terms of, like you say, talented people who are going to be in the ring that are on it. But it does kind of speak volumes, and disregarding the fact that they had a pay-per-view 3 weeks before WrestleMania or whatever it is, does speak volumes that a lot of these programs have come together with 15 days to go until WrestleMania. Like, a lot of them, we were like, the fact me and Bloody Hamlet last week could do a podcast called Predicting WrestleMania 37. Can you imagine that? Oh, I wonder what's going to be on WrestleMania, you know, 18 or whatever. It's like, well, probably could probably have a guess out of the top of my head.
Because I know.
I plan it months and months and months and months in advance, but still. I am looking forward to it. And yeah, like we say, it's like we always say, whether it be main roster or NXT or whatever, going to be great on the night because...
Very good.
Get rid of all the writers and just say, you've got 20 minutes, you two. Just go and do stuff. They'll probably be fine. And that's not just talking about Owens and Zayn. That's the majority of people on this card. But anyway, we're here to talk about WrestleMania and the myths that surround it. And I want to start off with one that I have maybe lent on a little bit in the past, but it's something you've, you know, looked into yourself, and it's a falsehood that, oh, you know, CM Punk might want to come back to WWE because he still wants to tick off that whole main event box. That's not the case, is it?
Not anymore. It used to be. It did used to be. Even when he was speaking on the Art of Wrestling podcast with Colt Cabana, like, I get work dread summoning this and just in case I get bloody sued. But he said on the Art of Wrestling that he was so pissed off and miserable with his WWE experience, not only because the schedule was torturous, the whole corporate atmosphere just simply wasn't for him anymore. And this is the bit I'm scared about. Allegedly, per CM Punk, allegedly they were tacitly encouraging him to work through injuries that he probably shouldn't have worked through, allegedly. It's all CM Punk's words, and they're a matter of public record, and I'm not endorsing those words. But another driver behind his departure is that he felt consistently undervalued by that company. He kept reiterating, the people I am beating are going away. Would it not make, like, way more sense for me to, in fact, beat them? And they were like, well, no, they're the stars. Mm. I was like, well, they're not. I'm the star. I'm here. Like, are they going to be here in October when I'm doing a shift, when I'm doing a 20-minute main event? And he said, historically, and those are the words that he said on the Art of Wrestling podcast when he, long after he departed, but still in 2014, he said that he would have taken a clean job in a triple threat elimination match, also involving John Cena and The Rock.
Yeah.
Right? He would have gone in there, 5 minutes, pin me, then he can do the one-on-one. I just want to say that I've headlined it. It would, like, mollify my growing discontent if I could just say, right, I've headlined WrestleMania, I've achieved an ambition, then maybe he'd have more of a heart to settle back into an upper mid-card role and put people over, because he just wanted good stories, decent money, and the respect. He just wanted that massive run he'd went on to be valued with the main event of WrestleMania. He'd said in 2012 that he was close to quitting after WrestleMania 27, and obviously his nearly quitting and threatening to quit was fictionalized, and it informed the events of Money in the Bank 2011. He said, between WrestleMania 27 and Money in the Bank, he was this close to quitting because he didn't get the main event of WrestleMania. He said for him, it should always be WrestleMania, regardless of the part-timers or whatever. It should always be the biggest and best good guy versus the biggest and best bad guy. Mm-hmm. He didn't think The Miz was in that spot. He thought his work in the Straight Edge Society and that feud with John Cena that bubbled over 2010... in 2011 with the spilled Pepsi and the new Nexus and all the rest of it, he thought that was it. He thought he was a bigger, hotter star than The Miz. I mean, I know who I preferred out of Straight Edge Society Punk and Miz, and it was Straight Edge Society Punk. And he didn't get the main event, and he was pissed off, and he said, right, I'm going to leave. And he didn't, and, you know, the pipe bomb happened. So it might... A lot of WWE fans who miss Punk and really desperately want him to come back might lean on the fact that, you know what, if they promise them, guaranteed, cast iron, you will get the main event of WrestleMania where you to come back. People might be able to hold on to that hope. Unfortunately, it's a myth. He recently conducted a Twitter Q&A and he was asked that very question. Does it still gnaw at you that you didn't get the main event of WrestleMania? He said, no disrespect, I think you've had a fabulous career in spite of it, but I'm just asking the question. And he said, no, it's bullsh. It was a trap I fell into. Doesn't mean shh. So unfortunately for any WWE fans out there who missed CM Punk's Q&A, that is not going to tempt him back at all.
Yeah, I've lent on this a lot, as I said, in terms of saying, oh, Punk might come back for this and this and that. But you say so yourself when you were writing about it, the fact that better people than a lot of the main eventers have done bigger things at WrestleMania without having to have been in the main event. You know, you think of some of the great WrestleMania matches and you don't go, yeah, it was good, but it wasn't the main event. Like Rock Hogan, you don't go, yeah, it's good. It's not the main event, was it? So I think it's one of those things, and it's something we're going to get onto more in a second, talking about the main event. Do you think it's got not less prestigious, but do you think the way that it's been sold? I mean, they say nowadays, oh, we've got four main events at WrestleMania. Do you think it's become slightly watered down?
And it's one of those things. It's never going on last traditionally, but also not traditionally, has always meant a lot to a certain portion of wrestling fans and indeed the talent, because like until very recently, CM Punk held it in the highest esteem. I know that Tony Khan has said, like, I know for a fact that there's probably a match on a pay-per-view that I run that is going to go longer and it's probably going to get a hotter reaction than the world title match. But for Tony Khan, and far be it for me to disagree with him, believes ardently that the world title to be established and just forever treated as a world title absolutely must, under every single circumstance, go on last. From that we can infer that Tony Khan, promoter of the year, believes that the main event, the last match, is not quite the be-all and end-all, otherwise why have a roster, but he certainly places the most profound importance on it. I can understand why talents would get pissed off if they were slotted in the middle, but it's in the modern era, you can always equalize the fact that you're not going on last by getting the most amount of time.
Yeah.
For me, I love John Moxley versus Chris Jericho at Revolution 2020. I, in fact, think it's possibly one of the most underrated matches in recent memory because it was such a fun, ultra-dramatic, all-action brawl with just a classic babyface showing intelligence at the finish. But I'll remember that pay-per-view for the goddamn tag team match. It went on the longest, it got the most time, it got the loudest reaction. I mean, that match is synonymous with Revolution for me. You might consider it a myth that the main event goes on last. For me, everything's selective. Mm. Everything's conditional on what I think of the show itself. And yeah, I can understand, however, why talents would perceive the last match to be the main event, because that's how it was for years and years. But Hogan used to go on halfway through and then piss off because he got hungry. He was like me reviewing and previewing NXT.
Well, it actually allows me to transition to something interesting off the back of that, speaking of main events, and that is the WrestleMania myth. And it's, you know, it's always changed with more so since the advent of two Royal Rumble winners, but the myth that the Royal Rumble winner should main event WrestleMania. I mean, obviously, WrestleMania 35, he opened the sodding show, but I distinctly remember one of the real moments for me of just like, oh, yeah, no, that's a load of bollocks, was heading into WrestleMania 34. When I think I got a bit apoplectic in the office when someone even dared to say, what do you reckon the main event's going to be? And I was like, well, it's AJ Shinsuke. Shinsuke won the why wouldn't AJ and Shinsuke main event for the sodding WWE title? And that's just not the case anymore. Obviously, it's slightly different. We may well see. No, we're only going to see one, in my opinion, of the two Royal Rumble winners, despite the fact there's two nights of WrestleMania main event. I don't think, I love her, she should have, but the way they've built it, it's horrible. So they're not going to have, I don't think they're going to have Bianca and Sasha main event Saturday. I think that's going to be Drew and Bobby Lashley, but that shouldn't be a shock because it's not been the case for a long while, this.
No. You can trace it back years and years and years. Realistically, since there were two titles and two brands and only one last match at WrestleMania, because prior to 2020, it always just went one night. Like, there's always been cases where they've chosen to go for like the World Heavyweight title or the Universal title, and it's not gone on last because there's only one match that can go on last. It's just marketing. It's a way to sell the prestige of the Rumble. And to be honest, it's not one of the myths that pisses me off the most. And if we don't get to them on your questions, I'm just going to talk about them anyway at the end of the podcast, Will Warren. But now it's like, it's a provable lie. Yes, this year is going to be two nights. Last year was two nights. Theoretically, because there now are in fact two Rumble matches for the men and the women, you could have both winners, main event or headline, both shows. Like in 2022 and in 2023, at present, at time of recording, there's only going to be a one-night WrestleMania again. Mm-hmm. So it's a provable lie, or the winner of the main event gets the winner of the Royal Rumble gets to main event WrestleMania. Well, that's bollocks, because there's two Rumble matches and there's one last match at WrestleMania. But again, it's just some bollocks that they say, and they just say bollocks every single week. But it's another myth. It's more of a WWE one. More of like just a thing that WWE says that no one really believes. There's some bollocks on this list that people believe, I'll tell you that.
Just flashbacks to like WrestleMania 22, when Rey Mysterio did the impossible, won the Royal Rumble, then put it on the line and lost that shot against Randy Orton, then won it back at No Way Out. And then they went, okay, we'll put you on, and then we'll put Triple H and John Cena in the main.
9 minutes as well, like a 9 minute match.
It's ridiculous. I watched it back the other day. I was like, well, that was quick.
Yeah.
Randy Orton, Kurt Angle, and Rey Mysterio. Keep it under 10 minutes, boys. Come on, wrap it up. No one's here to see you, boys. Take it out.
Triple H has to go 25 minutes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right, let's talk about some of the other myths of WrestleMania. What do you want to tackle first? The do-or-die nature of the first-ever WrestleMania, or just completely making up attendances?
Could we do a quick one on Sergeant Slaughter?
I was saving that for the finish.
Oh, okay, we'll save that for the finish. Right, we'll do or die first, because it's actually interesting, this.
Yeah.
Tell me the myth, and I'll tell you why it's exposed.
Well, WrestleMania 1, it was, if it had gone wrong or hadn't been as successful as it was, that's the end of the WWF as you know it, based in the most microcosmic way of it all.
It's virtually completely true, this. Virtually. I'm saying virtually because I've included it in the list, but it's virtually true. It was pretty much all or nothing. Aggressive expansion cost exorbitant vast sums of money, to the point that had WrestleMania 1 failed, Vince McMahon, all of the money he had to invest, all of the monetary obligations he had to pay to various syndicated networks, etc., like, it would have been at great pains to make all of that up. And in fact, WrestleMania 1 almost was a total disaster. It was screened across various venues in closed circuit, the advance attendances for which were genuinely quite dire. They had to cancel outright several of them, thinking, well, we're going to lose money, so we better just not proceed with them. And what happened was, on the week of, they sort of fell arse backwards into a Saturday Night Live hosting gig with Mr. T and Hogan, and then another chat show hosted by Richard Belzer, on which the host asked Hulk Hogan how to all fake this. Can you apply a hold? And Hogan did so. Belzer passes out, cracks his head open, and there was a big massive furore. But the publicity it generated allowed people to think, oh, Christ, this thing's cool. Look at how big Hulk Hogan is. He's a star, and he can hurt people. And then drove this interest in WrestleMania 1. In fact, it was a big success. However, it wasn't quite completely and utterly do or die, because the WWF had expanded to such an extent, and it was so firmly established in so many markets already by 1985. What would have happened, as what happens with a lot of failing companies that still have a name value and potential as investments, is that various creditors, as I understand it, would have intervened, and the WWF would have proceeded in some form. However, the different sources of financial backing would have meant that Vince McMahon couldn't have realized it in his own singular vision. He would have had to have played nicely with others. And can you well imagine that happening? No, not really. And in the meantime, if other people left for more money, if there was no money to pay them, all of these stars could have went elsewhere across these various other expanding territories like Watts and JCP. It would have been incredibly interesting in one of those almost half tedious what if scenarios, because there's so many permutations you could never have nailed down precisely what have happened. But the reduced version is, had WrestleMania failed, Vince McMahon would have had to have relied on different financial benefactors to proceed with the WWF, and they would have had wanted to have their say in how it was ran, and that would not have ended well at all.
You've mentioned finances there. That very quickly allows me to stop off in the fact that WrestleMania is not WWE's most important show of the year anymore, really, is it?
No, it's not. An episode of SmackDown is more important than WrestleMania. In the grand scheme of things, in terms of a show that generates money, an episode of SmackDown now is more important to WWE than WrestleMania. They don't necessarily need a WrestleMania. They do, in fact, need. That's the thing. If you put it down to needs, if Vince McMahon was like, right, okay, what you can do is you can have 3 months of SmackDowns or one WrestleMania. You go 3 months of SmackDown, 3 months of SmackDown. Just TV revenue is the absolute be-all and end-all to WWE. In fact, in the network area, various WrestleManias have just broke even. It's a required thing. Like, they make a hell of a lot of money for the host cities. Various relationships can be established with host cities. It's going to be bigger again now that the Peacock deal is in effect. But for several years there, telly was of vast more importance, and it's not even the biggest revenue earner on pay-per-view. Those are, of course, the Saudi shows. So it's an enduring institution I don't want to dump on, because people have very cherished memories of WrestleMania. Hell, I still do. But it's not like the most important show of the year. If you look at the difference in importance between WrestleMania 1 and WrestleMania 37, they are absolutely worlds and worlds and worlds and worlds apart.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you can sit here and say, oh, why, you know, in this, when we're more, having more regular Saudi shows, why have they taken the title off Daniel Bryan or whatever? Because he ain't going. And at the end of the day, they will happily sacrifice storylines and go, oh, we'll do some sort of workaround where we take it off him for a month and put it back on him for a month. Because that is more important than saying, oh, Bryan held it for a year or whatever storyline you're doing, because Saudi's just going to throw money at the problem. And sort of akin to that, you know, I sat here 6 months ago, maybe probably more actually, and fantasy booked with yourself and with Hamflet about, like, oh, can they get Bayley Sasha to next WrestleMania? Why would they want to do that? Like, Bayley right now is not on the WrestleMania card. She deserves to be. She should.
But basically, what's happened is, as you said, there's no incentive for WWE to build a storyline and to prolong it, and to very, very subtly, and I mean, they're incapable as well. This is what kind of half about this takes. I don't have to, but also they can't. So there are two reasons, in fact. But there's no incentive for WWE to build and slow burn and build and build and make the biggest match possible on the biggest show possible, because that show is no longer the biggest show possible. All of TV in the old model, in effect, used to serve to enrich the biggest matches. You would keep certain stars apart, like The Rock and Austin would, in 1999 and 2000, wouldn't have a match together in July, August, September, because you think, well, saving that one for April, because on April we're going to get the biggest payday of the year, we're going to earn the biggest amount of money we will in one night. There's there's no incentive to do that anymore. They make more money off the TV than they do off WrestleMania. So the idea is, instead of using that TV as the vehicle to extract every single dollar we possibly can on the big stage, I mean, there's just no incentive to do that anymore. Because what you're doing by doing that is you're not making the TVs as big as they can be, and you're not blowing things off on TV to get a rating when you really need one. And all of that in service for something just like WrestleMania. I mean, these words are sad, even as I say them, but it's just WrestleMania in itself is the biggest be-all and end-all show to which everything culminates. Sadly, I'd prefer it the other way, because you got better TV. It's more long-term, week-to-week investment, but there's just no longer an incentive to operate like that.
Let's talk about WrestleMania attendances. Obviously, this year's got a reduced attendance for obvious reasons. Last year had one big fan. And in previous years, they've broken a lot of records. Or have they?
Well, they certainly broke their existing attendance record at WrestleMania 3 in 1987. But they, in effect, broke it again in 1992. But they couldn't brag about that, because the real number that broke WrestleMania 3's attendance was worse than the fake number they made up in 1987. There's an interesting postscript to this story, right? As the records show, or for that matter, don't, as we'll get to, they said that 93,000 people packed into the Pontiac Silverdome to watch Andre the Giant get body slammed by Hulk Hogan. This was even New Japan, who are a more truthful company, who would never do like, oh, this match is going to happen. Oh, no, we're not. We're going to bait and switch it. And there's going to be an interference. I mean, there's bloody loads of interferences now. But you know what I mean? They basically don't do the WWE bollocks of, oh, this card, that's subject to change. Like 9 times out of 10, they will say, right, okay, this is the card you are going to get, because it's meant to emulate a sport. It's like the Premier League says, oh, you're going to get Tottenham versus Fulham. Oh, no, wait, Manchester United are going to come on the last minute. That's not how it happens.
But that even New Japan, so good at the last minute. They're putting the FA Cup final shot on the line.
Can you imagine? It's just a load of bollocks. But even New Japan historically would just say, we probably can't get away with it. No one's going to count everyone. And it looks like we're more popular if we say like 60,000 turned up, not like 40. And you know what? 60,000 and 40,000. Like, who the hell knows what it looks like? I look at a football stadium and someone says, oh, yeah, there's however many fans packed in here. Sometimes I think, oh, is that it? Looks like there's bloody loads. Like, a long, long time ago, a wrestling promoter realized that people can't really tell the difference between 40 and 60,000, or even like 18 and 12, and just thought, say it's 18, makes us look more popular.
Yeah.
We did this for years and years and years, and they still do. New Japan have actually stopped. And they said 93,000. Dave Meltzer was told by the WWE events promoter at the time, Zane Breslov, actually, you know what? There was only 78,500 in there. So he was told by someone who was there, Bruce Pritchard. It was like, people who are there, don't you? Well, someone who was there, the actual promoter of the event, said there's not 93, there's 78,500. Dave Meltzer, in 2001, I believe, when he was on like decent terms with WWE, he just probably isn't anymore, said, right, okay, well, I'm that fancy just finding out for certain, because it's been a long-standing myth and question. How many people were there? And WWF willingly gave him the records, the data that showed, in fact, 78,500 people paid to be there. There was probably more, but paid attendance was 78,500. Years and years later, wrestling journalist David Bixenspan did his own sort of investigation into the matter for Deadspin. A lot of interesting points were made that sort of cast doubt over the legitimacy of the sources. He's a very meticulous guy, is Bixenspan. So I think he looked at a report that Breslov had handed to Dave Meltzer. Certain suites and sections were missing. And he also established that an event that the Pontiac Silverdome had put on, a visit of the Pope, no less, had attracted some 88,000 fans. And the pictures looked identical to that of WrestleMania 3. And we knew from the football attendance that, one, wrestling can fit more in because the entire field was covered in seats, and that the football attendance, I think, capped out at 80,000. And if it capped out, they were allowed to screen the football games in various other locations. So basically what I'm getting at is that, or what Bix and Span was getting at, is the stadium looked full. There was at least 80,000 there for full football games. If you add yet more for the wrestling, and if you look at the pictures, and there's literally not an empty seat in the house, it can't possibly be 78. We don't know if it's 93, but 78 is far too low. But basically, A, it's one thing to just look at two pictures and say, well, they look a bit similar to me. Like, that's not the same as having a record of people who paid as compiled internally by WWE's records department. And two, look, it just was never 93, ever 93. And a WrestleMania 32...
Well, before we get started, I'd love to have been Zane Bresloff just stood there. Okay. Good event, guys. It's good. Are they going to do the announcement now? 93,000! What? What are you talking about? Well, yes, let's quickly talk about WrestleMania 32, where they were like, right, there's this many people in here, plus we're including ticket sellers and staff, and if you've got any photos of other people on your phone, they count towards the attendance as well. It was mad, that one. 100,000! Mad.
What's happened was, Vince McMahon was like, I need it. I need to say that I did it. And the AT&T Stadium is like, it looks the biggest, it looks the sleekest, it looks the most modern. It had an established standing capacity of 105, I guess, for like these mega concerts where there's only like the stage and the whole field, as well as the actual rafters, are filled to the absolute brink. So there's a documented standing capacity of 105. And Vince, as I put in the article, being quite clever, didn't decide to do, I'm going to do 104,980. He just basically went 101,000. Changing an F to a B because an A is like too questionable. but you needed that over 100,000. You got it with like, what a one. Okay, just change that F to a B. And he had to, because he's liable to his shareholders, he had to say in the interim, of course, doesn't that many people paid to go? I'm counting the ushers and the ticket sellers and all of that. Basically, if you were selling beer at that show, you were like one of the 101,000 enthralled by Roman Reigns persevering over the authority. And it's like, you probably had your back to the action and you were in a kiosk, like, where you literally couldn't see anything. But no, you saw it. Everyone saw it. And a depressing postscript to that conversation, it was actually Shane McMahon's return and the announcement of his match with The Undertaker that apparently compelled tens of thousands of people, and it did, because that's when the ticket sales started picking up. Tens and thousands of people on the back of Shane McMahon announcing that match would take. I went, well, I'm going to this. We've had to suffer Shane ever since.
Just, he's so depressing, like you say. Let's conclude then by talking about WrestleMania 7 with a guy who's so over as a heel, they have to move it. It's not because no one's actually buying tickets. There's a security threat. Bollocks.
Total bollocks. What really pisses me off about this is that not only do they lie to our faces about it, but they kind of try to do it twice. And this is all Bruce Pritchard on the Something to Wrestle podcast, basically. So the story goes back in the day that Sergeant Slaughter was simply too reviled as this incredibly controversial heel figure, that his safety could not be assured in such a big open-air stadium with literally that many people in. Like, 15,000 people is not walking down the street. Like, that's a bit of a security concern if, in fact, he was so over and so reviled where you thought, like, something could happen to him here, and it's hard to find out where it's coming from, the threat. Jesus Christ, it's all the
Yeah, for those unaware, he was an Iraqi sympathiser, wasn't he?
He's an Iraqi sympathiser as WWE sought to exploit the ongoing Gulf crisis, and what happened is that as it sort of really, the storyline took form, like, that conflict got incredibly bloody. And it was like, oh, Jesus Christ, like, this is getting worse and worse by the goddamn day. It was so ghoulish for them to do it that Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer genuinely had an existential crisis about what he felt like being a wrestling reporter and almost quit.
Wow.
A lot of the mutants who just can't accept the fact that on average NXT gets more star ratings, WWE NXT gets more average higher star ratings than New Japan or AEW per takeover. You can't sanction Dave Meltzer's existence. You would have been happy with that. He almost quit because he was so appalled by what the WWF did. In fact, the general public was so appalled by just the unseemly vibe that the WWF radiated at that time, they decided not to watch it at all. 400,000 domestic buys on pay-per-view, down over 2 years from WrestleMania 5, 767,000. They literally almost halved their, like, the ceiling for, like, this is an amazing storyline. I'm paying for this. like almost less than half people were like, this is a load of bollocks. Like, you're insulting my intelligence. This is all quite gross. Just absolutely failed to do it. So the fact that that few people in comparison to WWF's established, we will pay for this base, just thought, nah, nuts to this. Like, completely damns the idea that they had to downsize from a stadium to an arena because it was just so, the temperature in the air was just too hot. What a load of bollocks. There was a 15,000 advance for like a 80,000 seat stadium. It would have looked appalling. They knew this. They downsized it to arena. And years later, Bruce Pritchard sought to clarify the PR messaging at the time by saying, no, it obviously, like, it wasn't that over. We knew business was a little bit down. It was just an event of, theoretically, had we sold the tickets, we just couldn't have done it because the crime rate in the neighboring areas was so bad. It was just an event of that scope in itself, regardless of how hot business was or wasn't, or regardless of who was headlining it. We just couldn't have policed an event of that scope. There were more people, by your own bollocks admission, at WrestleMania 87. You'd ran an absolutely massive stadium-sized show in 1990, the previous year. Did you downsize that to an arena because you couldn't effectively police a massive stadium, like you'd already ran at two WrestleManias? In fact, a year later, they did a stadium in 92.
Yeah.
They've been doing stadiums every single year since 2007. Then from 2007 onwards, they've never, ever gone back to an arena. Just a total load of bollocks, and it pisses me off.
I love this, though, because if/when these podcasts eventually come to an end, because I love doing these with you guys, and if Beat's doing proper work, doesn't it? I'm just going to say, you know what the problem was? I think the podcasts were too good. That was the thing.
Sidgwick was too polarizing a figure. So
he's just too over. No, he's not.
I mean, I am. Come on, don't be a dick.
Right, let us know your thoughts ahead of WrestleMania and some other myths that you want us to expose on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Oh, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Less than 2 weeks to go now till WrestleMania. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling for all the build-up and reaction to it, of course, and for daily wrestling podcasts too. But for now, this has been Get the Table. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.